All right, welcome to HP's Oddcast. Thank you very much for coming back and listening today. I am fortunate enough to have a good and very talented, very funny individual here with me as my guest. I would like to introduce Seymour Swan.
How are you? How are you guys?
All right, there's Seymour Swan. Thank you very much for coming back. I want to back, now that we're giving introductions, I want to bring back a favorite of mine, one of my Oddcasts. Please welcome again, Kevin McGee.
Hello. How's everybody doing out there?
As he stands into the mic, like there's somebody
here. No, I didn't know. I think someone's looking at me. I didn't know. I realize I don't have to have a facial expression.
Yeah, you don't.
I put a paper bag over my head. Just be like, hello.
Yeah, that's it.
How's everybody doing? So,
and
say hello to
little
everybody.
Circles and everything.
Yeah.
And my other HP Oddcaster, I'd like to welcome back. Very talented, very funny, well, very stoic, Eddie McGuire.
Hello.
It's crickets again. And I'd like to introduce a special guest of mine. He is, I was able to be lucky enough to have him on the show. He is going to be with us for this episode. Please, Felix Cabrera.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. Thank you very much. If you've listened to episodes 1 and 2, you can always catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, iCloud, and on my website, hpproductions.net. You can always go on down there and click on to each one of those in case you have trouble for, as I was hearing before, for, what was it, the computer retarded?
I was in cloud 9.
So for those of you who have trouble getting onto the any kind, I'm currently now on iTunes and Stitcher. So I'd like to thank again, Seymour Swan, for coming in and giving some of his time, some of his effort. According to what's happening today, we're recording live at the Producers Club here on 44th and 9th Avenue. And today seemed to be kind of hectic. There was like some kind of craziness going around with parking, so I'm just lucky to get here get this rocking, you know. Let's get started. I wanted to ask Seymour Swan to come over because in the past, I know he's a very talented comedian. We've been doing it for several years. More than several years. You've been doing it longer than all of us combined in this room.
Yeah, it's very possible. I don't know how everybody else has been doing it, but I've had my show 25 years.
25 years? 25 years into comedy. I'm going to bring up some memories. Hopefully you can see if those are correct or not. Yeah. I know you worked in an office when you first started out in comedy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, advertising.
Advertising, that's right. And you met your wife there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And at that time, that's when you decided, you know what, I'm going to give comedy a chance. I'm going to go into it. And at that time, you were...
Well, I was working and duplicating him. Not the gracious, most gracious job, but... my friends that started comedy before me, I had watched them for like 5 years, and I just was amazed how they were doing it. You know, it was easy to do it in a project where we came from. You know, we're in the hallway hanging and making everybody laugh. But to watch my friends go on stage and do it professionally, I was like kind of blown away. But I was scared. So for 5 years, I literally just went to all the clubs with them, and just one day, I just said, I'm going to go try it.
And how old were you?
I was 26.
26?
Yeah.
26, so, so before that, were you always just goofing around or just...
More in the neighborhood. I wasn't like, you know, like class clown, none of that stuff. I mean, there's probably people that do know I do stand-up now that probably are probably half shocked that I'm doing it because, you know, I wasn't like the class clown. I wasn't the guy that would run up to you and tell you jokes every 2 seconds. You know what I mean? At all.
You were the serious guy. So you were the serious comedian
I actually still have a lot of that in me when I'm off stage.
Right.
I guess it's because I've been doing this so long. You know, it's like sometimes people see you and they, you know, like in my neighborhood, they don't even... The ones that do know... They don't see that persona, so they're like, "You really a comedian?" It's like, you know, but I don't just joke around left and right. You know, I'm not on stage, I'm not working, and I've been doing it 25 years. So,
yeah.
You know, there's times to just put it aside.
Right.
You're making dupes and contacts.
Yeah.
I did that too.
I mean, at that point, you started. You told your wife. Well, at that time, your acquaintance, because you didn't even know her.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. Yeah, I was trying to get to know her.
Right, you were dating.
She was
and
busy turning me down.
So
basically, what it was.
So did you do the "I'm going to be a comedian to impress her"? Or you just wanted to...
No, not at all. Not at all. I didn't. I don't even know if she. I don't even know if she knew I was doing it because I just did it and I didn't tell nobody until I got a little bit better at it. You know, I wasn't going to just say hi. I'm doing comedy and have people come down and sup.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was fortunate because of where I lived and the people I grew up with and the way we were funny. I was naturally funny. I just had to learn how to do it professionally and then find out how to keep doing it my way and not try to fit in. Because in the beginning, you know, it's like this new community and everybody wants to fit in and, you know, meet you at the open mic and all. After a while, you have to... You got to say to yourself, you know, this is my career, not ours.
Right.
So I have to do what I do.
Right. I put you in your room, like reading a book, like How to Score Checks Being Funny.
Yeah. I wrote many of them. Yeah. That's Five Shades of Comedy.
Do they call it? Hey, baby, what happens when the chicken crosses the road?
Yeah, exactly.
You're cute.
Exactly. You know, it was a different venture for me. You know what I mean? But scary. But I had good people behind me, and I enjoyed it. I mean, my first show was actually around here somewhere. It was a contest, but I didn't know it was a contest for singers and like poets. And I went up there and told a joke, and they took the microphone from me. Yeah. I was embarrassed, but you know, when I
not only is he black, he's telling jokes.
Yeah.
What is this?
But the funniest thing was, I remembered when I got back in the car, you know, after sobbing, of course, I realized the first joke I ever told, they laughed.
Right.
I never got to tell another because they took the microphone from me. But I realized that I did get a laugh.
Oh, okay.
The next day I went to Eagle Tavern.
Okay.
That's where a lot of us, like,
doing 14th Street.
Yeah, 14th Street, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I grew up in the neighborhood. I grew up right there, 17th Street. Yeah. I went to the open mic there and met Tim Davis.
Okay.
And just took off from there. And I had my own show within 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah, within 4 months. I quit my day job and everything.
You said, I'm doing it,
and, you know, if I don't make it as a star, I just want to be successful enough to be able to...
To make a living.
Yeah, to make a living. Right.
Make a living. What was the event you were at? Like Seventh-day Adventist annual barbecue or something?
It was
warm, well received there.
Yeah.
Was there people, are the singers?
It wasn't for comedy. You know, like I said, I was just in the wrong place, you know. But like I said, I got the one joke off,
right?
You know, and then they laughed, so they carted me away like I was in, you know, like the White Apollo.
Right. Yeah, right.
You
know?
There was no booing, just get the fuck out.
Because you learn when it comes to comedy about booing.
Yeah.
Each race boos differently.
Yeah, right. And then a hook and a fishnet.
Yeah, fishnet. Yeah, a little piece of quiche. So,
the white crowd will go,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The white crowd are the most devious.
Right.
Yeah. See, they don't laugh.
They don't laugh. They just stand there. They'll let you go through the whole 15, 16 minutes and just look like an idiot.
Yeah,
the Spanish people, they'll boo get you off.
Right. They're honest about it.
White people, they just sit there.
Yeah.
Give you the silent treatment.
They just let you die. They just let you die.
Yeah, now I'm letting them die all the time.
Yeah.
You need a drying wipe.
Yeah. You know?
But did you get into that point? I mean... You said as a kid you were funny, but were you trying to, like, compete? Because I see you have three sisters, two brothers. That's a large family.
Yeah.
So were you always, or it was just uniquely?
I was more funny, like, when I was with my friends. My family's not funny.
Okay.
No. Sisters aren't funny.
They're serious.
My older brother, he tries to tell jokes, but he tells, like, those, I don't even know what kind of jokes they're called.
You
know?
Office jokes?
Yeah, like that. It's just crazy, you know? Okay. Yeah, he'll say stuff like, you know, like those old things, like, you know, A, B, see you later, you know, that kind of...
Yeah,
And I'm always looking at you. Yeah, he gets the stare. Yeah. It's a quiet stare.
Right.
Those are his jokes. Yeah, left and right.
And did you say, okay, I'm going to do it better, or did you just decide to do stand-up and...
I just decided to do it because of my friends that I was watching, you know, they said you should be going up. I was just scared. I didn't understand how you were making people laugh. You didn't know. I was used to making people laugh. Mm-hmm. You know, the projects in the hallway in the winter, you know, we're all just, you know, having fun. So I was more amazed that they were doing it in front of people that they didn't know from a hole in the wall.
Right.
And that was scared me the most.
Right.
I was like, I can handle rejection, but I just didn't get it. And it really did take 5 years. And I didn't even tell them I was going up. I just went up. Like I said, I went to the wrong place. but after that...
Why's everybody wearing hoods?
Luckily, the Eagle Tavern was the next day.
Right.
So I kind of got over, you know,
it
real quick. Yeah, so the Eagle Tavern was the next day, the open mic, and then just did it, and I fell in love with it. I really did.
Right. Like comedic kicks.
Yeah. Fell in love with it. And then, you know, as time go on, you know how comedy is. It's not easy. It's It's a big, big mental game.
Yeah, because back then when you said you got that show immediately, back then there wasn't that much competition. There was just...
Yeah. Like, if we did an open mic, you know, there could have been 15, 20 comics at the most. I mean, you know, now. An open mic, I mean, you got paid a soda to go on.
You have 15 mics per three-block square.
Pretty much.
30 guys at each mic.
Exactly. But what I'm saying, it's not like now. Now it's infested. Not that... Those that are doing this
Those roaches are at the mic's head.
Right? Everybody, your mother thinks they could be do comedy.
Yeah.
And it's gotten to the point where, I mean, it's only annoying for, like, the ones that have been doing it a long time, only because the club owners, they have all these new shows that they call the bringer shows.
Yeah.
And it just takes away from the quality of the show. I mean, the owners don't care. You know, they're all about the numbers in the seats.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because I can see if you have one bringer on your show or two possibly, but a whole one. I've seen those shows and I haven't been able to stay no longer than probably like 4 minutes. I just can't do it.
You get bringer shows where the 19-year-old kid at NYU brings his entire family from Long Island.
Oh, yeah, he's the star.
And he's up there going,
my mom's curtains are dirty. And it was like,
is this a show? What's going on here?
Yeah.
It's like,
and they get the encouragement from that and they keep doing it. And it's like, I can't even watch those. I can't. Even in my show, I would say I may have two bringers probably every 4 months or something like that. I can't do it.
Yeah,
I can't. I work too hard. A lot of the guys with me have been doing comedy over 10, 12 years. You know, I can't.
And the people that see you, they figure, this is how a comedy show is?
Exactly.
I got to go back.
You got bad knees. You really do.
Yeah. I can't. So,
I got to pay for this.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure, you can.
So, in the comedy world, as you guys are describing it, has, like, the city changed, I guess, the same way, right? Just with this whole new influx?
A lot of the city and a lot of the clubs, yeah. It's not just one club in particular. For some reason, I don't know. You know, like, a lot of things go up and then come down. And when there's a lull in comedy, I guess what they've done now is found a way to keep the business going, at least owners-wise, by having these bringer shows.
Right.
If you look at a lot of clubs now... Clubs that were like super A clubs, like even Comic Strip, they would never entertain, you know, a bringer show or a new talent show. You know what I mean? Now everybody has them. Everybody has them.
What is that? They're trying to appeal to what is out there, the market, as opposed because they compete with YouTube now, the internet, and
They're just trying to get people to get butts in the seat, and unfortunately, to a certain degree, it seems like they don't. Quality's not the issue anymore.
Right.
Quality's not the issue.
Well, because if you have all these people, fending and fiending for that attention, right? Mm-hmm. They figure, you know what, this person wants as much attention. He's not really the comedy. Maybe he'll bring 30 of his family members.
Yeah.
And if the eight people that are into the club bring 30 of the family members, that's it. And it creates its own market.
Right.
And it dilutes it.
Yeah.
The guys in the
quality-wise, it does.
Quality-wise.
You know, I mean, for the owner, you know, he or she's got to do what they got to do. I mean, that part I kind of understand.
Yeah.
But as an artist...
Right. How about these new Yorkers? Are they
is there such a thing as a new Yorker?
Like, you know, it's just like a lot more people from around the world and around the country living. It's not like, you know, everybody that
living here or like,
yeah, living here.
No,
just living. I mean, it's like this whole new influx of new people. That it's not like the way we grew up here. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I guess it doesn't. People are people, but
I haven't seen too much of a difference in.
Yeah,
I mean,
people are people.
Like I said, I can only speak from my show and some of the shows that I do, and not even in New York. But you know, my show, because it's an all pro show, you know, we don't get those. I mean, we get people that are just there for straight comedy and not.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
not to support.
Right. You know,
they want to go to
can't wait for Tommy to go on.
Yeah.
You know, so
Tommy.
You know, yeah. So you know, I had to look for a new comedian there.
I got Tommy. Also, Seymour, that it makes it difficult for the one guy that is very talented.
Oh, yeah.
That's trying to make it, who deserves a spot, but he gets shunned
because
he can't
bring
a nerdy kid.
Yeah.
With his black rimmed glasses, knows how to do his Facebook,
and he can't bring friends.
Right.
So he's shunned. You know, and there's a lot of that's one of the main things I don't like about it. Also.
Right.
You know, and then the ones that fall victim to it, they don't just do it once. They that's like all the shows they do, and it's like,
no doubt.
You know,
in today's world, you have to be your own corporation if you want to have success in anything that you do.
Yeah.
You have to market. You got to do everything. You got to become an LLC or IFC
You got to have a game plan, but you got to have a lot of self esteem. You know what I mean? Because it's like,
no doubt.
If you do shows that are like at this level, and you stay there, that's where you're going to be.
Correct.
Right. You know, if you don't get out of it, and you know, say, listen, I'm tired of being I'm number 15 to go on because there's
yeah.
You know, I saw a show the other day. The producer, 17 comedians.
Mm.
17.
Wow. A show, not a mic.
Just a show.
Wow.
17.
So that's a marathon.
Five or seven minutes each.
Okay.
No, I'll be nice. Because
wow.
I know the producers, so I'll be nice. But just
5 minute bits?
Yeah.
That's too much. You know what? It's like a cattle prod.
It's ridiculous.
Just moving it's ridiculous. Moving
and
an assembly
even,
line.
And it's even worse when it's 17 new people.
Oh.
No, it's
you know, it's
untried
over the head.
Comedy,
yeah,
where you're like, okay.
It's horrible. You know, and then of course at some point somebody that's new gets the check spot. So
right.
You know what I mean?
No.
So
yeah.
Then the show takes another nosedive.
Yeah.
And probably
yeah.
The more talented guy too is least amount of connections. I'm serious.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
It's
that happens.
Yeah, because you've exhausted all of your people
yeah.
Doing it previously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I, you know, that's why I said, you know, if you know, if I have a midnight show and it's 30 people, you know, which is low for us, I'd rather have the 30, you know, and have the pro show than, you know, go grab two new guys that aren't that
right.
Funny and
no doubt.
You know, taint the 30 people that were there to see the pros.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no doubt.
You know.
Now in your past history when you were doing stand up, was there any kind of situation where you found yourself like, what the fuck am I doing this? Or embarrassed at some point in the past? Or
there was only one embarrassment stand-up-wise. I mean, I never looked back and said, you know, why am I doing this?
Right.
I actually still to this day, I've been doing it 25 years. I love it.
True thing.
I have probably only taken maybe 3 weeks off of not
yeah.
Doing it out of 25 years.
Wow.
I love it. I enjoy it. You know what I mean? I get up for it. The most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me in stand-up was when I was new. I don't know how new, I can't remember. But there was a lady in the front, and I hit she wasn't laughing at my jokes. And at that point, I was like, just looking at her. Meanwhile, it was, let's say, 40 other people laughing.
Yeah.
But I just focused on her because she was dead center, and just looking at me, you know. And I had said something like, you know, why aren't you laughing? You know, does your facelift hurt? Everyone laughed, but somebody told me they saw some scars.
Oh.
And you know something?
Wow.
She got up. And she had a white Russian, and she
right.
Threw it in my face.
Wow.
Was her name Bernice?
I don't know her name, but she threw it in my face. But, you know, unbeknownst to her, my mom was in the audience.
Ooh.
Yeah, I didn't know my mom had a good left hook.
Oh.
Your mom had 3 scars on her face.
Now the girl had 4. My mom handled her business.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was this going well when you were on stage, or you found this out later?
Right after I got off, because after the woman, you know, the cup, she was gone. She didn't like status.
Okay.
She wasn't that badass.
You can't do it anymore with Bloomberg, dude. Everybody get arrested.
Yeah. Right? Especially if it's a 32 ounce. That's arrested just because it was a 32
ounce. You should have opened your mouth.
Yeah. I know. It was crazy.
That's a dangerous drink, by the way, a white Russian. That did me in a couple of nights.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even drink those, but
they're horrible.
Tasted all right at the time. For free, I wasn't complaining, I guess.
You didn't know.
That was probably the most embarrassing. I mean, I've seen a lot of worse things happen to other comedians.
Yeah.
I've seen some, you know, somebody rush the stage.
Wow.
A friend of mine got kneed in the groin. Christmas Illy, the co-owner of Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
Good friend of mine. We started together. He got kneed in the nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chris Elliott from...
Chris Mazzilli is one of the co-owners for Gotham Comedy Club.
Really good guy.
He
gives out free seminars.
He's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I love him. I worked with him for many, many years. So what a nice guy.
Chris Elliott. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah. The last time I saw him was in one of those scary movies.
He was the guy with all the pimples
and
Something About Mary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Okay, so now we went through that embarrassing part. Is there a part now that you see yourself saying...
IMBD? Right now. Where's Chris Elliott now?
Did you ever see yourself saying that I need to give this up because it's not going where you want it to? Because I get this a lot. I get it like, once you get a job, you need a job to support your career at this point. I mean,
I think anyone that's been doing it X amount of years has always said that to themselves at some point. Like, why am I doing this? Yeah, of course. But I always just stay strong to how much I love doing it. And the only time I really got serious about saying that was, again, when it was a lull and we weren't making the same kind of money. You know, so when you start looking at, you know, you know the cable is off, you're not making the bills, those kind of thoughts come.
Right.
You know what I mean? But other than that, you know, having a good supportive, you know, backbone like my wife, she don't quit what you love.
Right.
Don't quit what you love. Don't quit what you're good at.
That's good.
So, you know, just pound through it. I think anybody that's done it X amount of time, it's going to come to you. It's definitely, you're going to be like, what am I doing? This. You know, I've been working a month. I made $40.
Right.
You know, just, you know, all kinds of stuff. So it's about how much you love it. I mean, it's about how much you love it. And what you're willing to do to get better.
Anything in life, you know? I mean, it's your purpose, you know what I'm saying? And when you find your purpose, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's just as long as you're, it's part of who you are.
And you figure it out because, I mean, I don't know exactly when it hit me, but when I realized, you know, I ain't never going to be a star,
right.
I was fine with it. I actually was fine with it. And I know stars. That's how crazy that was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I grew up with people that are millionaires right now.
Right.
Okay, drop some names.
Nah, I don't feel like it, but trust me. And, you know, I worked with them for years, and then we stopped working together. But I never gave up. I never did whatever. You know what I mean?
No,
you know, it is what it is. But if you, again, like you said, if you love what you're doing,
right,
and you're able to make some kind of living out of it, then that grounds you better.
I want to say one last thing, and then shut up. You made me think of something. This is page 16, chapter 2. Okay. But seriously, like in life, we're taking comedians, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the comedian that's up there, I'm not a comedian, but the comedian that's up there that is feeling like, I don't know if I could do this, that's probably not what you're meant to be doing. you're just flowing and you're meant to be doing. You know what I'm saying?
Like, if you feel that too much, you may want to redefine what you want to do.
Yeah, and you just gave the example.
If you're nervous before you go on stage, that's a good thing.
Right.
That's good.
That's the best. Because it humbles you.
Absolutely.
It's like, I know
you flip
what I can do, and I know, you know, I can have a great set, but I always, always say to myself after a set, I can do better.
Mm-hmm.
This way, you know, I don't never become cocky. The nervousness, I love, you know, and especially if someone goes on before me and they're like, you know, burning the room down.
Right.
You know, then I got to get it together in my head. Like, you know, come on, let's do this mm-hmm. first. Like,
yeah.
And get into it. And I love it. I mean, in my head, with stand-up, when I do a show, you know, let's say it's us five, to me, it's a contest.
Okay.
To me, it's a contest. You know what I mean? So I've got to top you. I've got the top you. You know, to me, it's a contest.
You want
to
go right now?
Hey, let's go. Hey, whatever the weather, man.
It's like playing beer.
What? Can't wait to
go. I'm repeating first. Somehow, I hope you don't wrestle.
I'm having mom right now. I'll pounce on you. I'm telling you right now. I have all the worst scars on my face.
She's 2 miles away.
I'm over here.
She's up at the left
arm. Kevin.
That haircut woman,
Now, did you get that attitude from growing up in I hear that you grew up in the Chelsea Fulton houses?
Yeah.
Did you get that attitude, that competition attitude from growing up there? Or
A little bit. I mean, it was a mellow project. I mean, sometimes people hear the word projects and, you know, they look how did you make it out?
Right.
No. It was actually, Robert Fulton houses was the greatest childhood I could have ever had.
Yeah.
Everybody was big melting pot.
Yeah.
Everybody, to this day, and that's one thing I do love about Facebook in general, is you can get in touch with old childhood friends that you want to get in touch with, you know what I mean?
Right.
But what a great neighborhood. I mean, it was from 16th Street to 19th Street, and everybody knew everybody, and everybody just the best neighborhood I could ever want.
Really. So it wasn't like the Birds with junkies and there was always
a couple of drug addicts, but I don't even think I could name 10 of them.
So it was a competition thing.
It wasn't like, you know, I mean, I guess we say projects just to say it, but it's not that same thing.
Always,
it's not. It wasn't rough. You know,
totally.
I never dodged a bullet. That kind of thing. it was mellow. The mellowest project you ever wanted. You know.
What was the highest floor in those projects? Because I think that has to do with that.
They have high rises. 25. Four high rises.
Because I thought that they were lower. You know.
Well, the little ones go to 6. Yeah. And that's the ones I lived in. I lived in the 6th floor.
Right, I think that makes a lot of difference when you have, you know, just 6th floor building and
compared to 25
floor, 30, so much people.
Yeah, but we have 5 of them, 5 high rises. But everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew everybody.
It was a community.
You know? Yeah, it was a good community, you know.
All right.
I mean, just like I was telling you earlier, the people I grew up with, the projects, me and Wayne's family grew up together.
I believe
their grandparents are from New Rochelle. Anyway, but
well, their mother lives in Rochelle.
Is that what it is? Yeah, because I remember my friend lived right there. Yeah, so
yeah.
We
they bought our house. She lives in Rochelle.
Very nice.
They,
good
yeah,
people,
yeah.
man.
So we all grew up together, and you know, we were in the hallway and doing this, and that, and you know, I used to, you know, work with them,
right,
on the side and stuff like that. But these are the kind of people that were from, you know, the projects. Right?
Does that annoy you a little bit that people have to like adhere to that artistic idiom that they make their lives harder than it is to make them look how much they succeed? Is that kind of annoying
yeah,
you a little bit?
Yeah, because
as opposed to just being authentic.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people, even in music, like
Bob
too. Yeah.
Bob Newhart was one of the greatest comedians. He's a suburban white guy, all quiet, and
accountant.
Funny. Yeah, accountant.
Yeah,
so, and you know, Eddie Murphy had a hard life. So, but it doesn't matter. I think you could read that on stage when someone tries to.
When it's true and you're just trying to. It's just like even in music.
You feel that
energy. You have rappers that are thug rappers, and then when you go into their background, you know, they went to private school.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Charlie.
Kevin McGee was in class.
Yeah.
I know this guy.
Yeah. You know,
Puff Daddy went to Mount St. Michael.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford
it. Yeah. There's some people that lived it and got out of it, and there's some people that just, you know, use it for the. The situation they're in as far
Absolutely.
As, you know, the music or comedy. You know, comedy, I don't know, I haven't met many people that, you know, have had these super hard stories and then just got into comedy
right.
because it's so hard to get to the ultimate level
right.
that, you know,
right.
It's hard.
You say met, but do you know of them? I mean, I know that George Lopez grew up from shit and now he's one of the top Latino comics.
Yeah.
Out there.
I don't know everyone's story. I really don't.
But as far as you're concerned, that was your community where you mentioned that you grew up in that circle, and now you see them prosper, and you're like, okay.
Well, and they're one of the stories that they didn't have much money, and they prospered to where they are now.
Right.
So that's that's just their story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know a lot of comedians or you know that have struggled. Like I said, I was in such a mellow projects and you know great people. We. Wasn't much struggling.
It's a mental thing anyway, struggling.
Yeah. Well, it's what you make it. I mean, you decide to get out. You know, even like some of the basketball players. I mean, I even look at a guy like Ron Artest. Now, he's an idiot.
Right.
He's an idiot. But somehow he found a way to make millions.
Out of same chance.
He changed, actually, I think.
He changed for the most part, but he went back.
He did.
Hot second last
season. He dropped. I saw him.
One second.
What's his thing? Man of Love? What's his name?
Peace. Meta World Peace.
Meta World Peace.
You're absolutely.
I was going to say Man of War. I didn't know
why. But you're right.
Yeah, he's been in anger management forever. I mean, I think he's been in anger management since he was two. I mean, he's just in anger management.
He's
been doing well. Right after they had that fight in Indiana.
Right.
When the Pacers had the big brawl, which was.
Right.
The funniest thing I've ever seen in my life, because I don't know what these audience members were thinking. These guys are machines, and these guys are coming up to them like this, and Ron, I'll tell you, they're just dropping them like they're just dropping
like the
these
bulls
people.
Of Brooklyn, you know, just because you see them do it.
But it's people like that, you know, they're idiots, but somehow they found a way to take whatever craft and make millions.
You know what's bugged out about Ron Artest for me? You might feel the same way I'm feeling it, like, I feel like he's part of me in a certain sense because he's like one of the guys from the area that made it big in basketball.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? But he's, I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, the weirdest thing is really just, that bugs me out is when I see people like that, like him, Dennis Rodman, who really wasn't crazy as he ended up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you see people like this, even like there's a lot of basketball players that are horrible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may not even hurt them. They may only play one quarter. You know, a game, but these guys somehow snuck in, made millions. So those are guys you sometimes take your hat off to. But it's like, you know, you're not that much of an idiot if you were able to get yourself to, you know,
so there were the
millionaire status. You know?
There were the dreamers that actually did make something out of it because you always have a dreamer and a realist.
Yeah. It became a trickle down effect. You know, for some people and for how like Keenan and them started. Because Keenan started first. Everybody just followed suit.
Right. And the dream is just a goal, but realized.
Yeah,
right.
Age 19.
And then you got the realist.
McGuire. You heard it on the podcast.
Looks on tape. Eddie McGuire, spiritual reckoning.
Going back to insecureness, I once did a show, and the guy who went before me, he was killing. He had people on the floor, and I'm saying to myself,
killing?
Where's the door? I'm saying. Like I'm getting out of here. I mean, I got that insecure.
Mm-hmm.
But then I said to myself, no, this is what you want to do. I went up on stage, and I actually did great because it was like a rolling ball. You know, people were already laughing.
Yeah, there's a part of you that has to remember what that guy just did at the end, and he's still killing. But then you have to put that to the side and just know what you do and believe in what you do.
Right.
And you, mm-hmm. you, I mean, if he's really killing you, you probably just got to step up the tempo mm-hmm. the first couple of minutes and then get him into your flow. You know, I mean, some people get so nervous. Guy last time, a new guy, matter of fact, on my show, and I had never worked with him before, and he went on after me, and I was actually kind of just relaxing on stage. I wasn't like pushing it. You know what I mean? And he didn't even finish his 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he just gave up. What are you doing?
Oh, man. It's like leaving with
and
your
And I even told the host to do wow. a couple of minutes, you know, after I finished.
Was it Eddie Cummings? Eddie, are you up?
It wasn't. He was a bringer guy.
Oh.
Yeah, and that was my point of why I don't like
because here you are trying to get a flow, and
I'm trying to help him. And you know, he wanted the shot. He asked me, and but I mean, just left.
And see, that's why I invited you here, because you're one of the classiest guys. And I've said this.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I've said this, and no matter where I go, we went to another comedy club. I'm not going to mention it. And I said, yeah, I only know one other person out of my whole 8 years of doing this that was classy enough to say, come on down. You know, no strings, and you're like, wait a minute. There's no strings? What's the strings? What's the catch? And it was you.
Personally, I hate doing that. You know, I hate doing it.
But that's one of your...
There's, like I said, when we talked about the shows and bringing people, I mean, you look at certain so many stipulations from a lot of other clubs. I mean, Caroline's has a bringer thing where you've got to bring, I think, 12, 15. So 15 now. It used to be 20.
15
it used
to 20. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Right? It used to be 20 now?
15 to 20.
The median has to bring those?
Yes. 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 Minimum 20.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. The first time, and this has been many years. They've had it for years.
Yeah,
right. I thought it went down to 15, but it's just crazy to even hear someone look someone in the eye and say, "You can perform. We'll give you a tape. You get the Caroline's background, and you got 20
people." How
big do you
think families are? Like me, and Eddie comes from these humongous Irish families. My mother's one of 15 kids. So,
oh, wow.
But what are they? Who knows that many people?
But you know something? Again, they've done it for years, and they get it done. They get it done. If you go there, if you go there when they have the new talent, it's packed.
We should make that. We should make that part of the show.
It's what?
Bring 30 people.
No, like everybody here, like not me, but you guys, because you four stand up. I could be the guy that could. You know, I'm just throwing this out there, but. We'll start with HP and like I'll go out and I'll get 20 people for you and we'll all support you at Caroline's.
Right.
And then we'll go around a circle.
Yeah.
Well, you guys don't even want to do Caroline's.
It's great. But the thing I don't get about that is, I mean, you're new.
Yeah.
You're still learning.
Right.
Who gives a shit about the tape? You're not gonna send that tape to no booker.
Right.
You
know, right. Because
the Caroline's logo, and I'm not just bashing Caroline's. There's a lot of clubs that do it. Who cares about that logo back there? You're new.
It's right. All changed anyway. Everything has changed.
Everybody wants to hit the mecca of it as soon as possible without really doing the work.
Everything's changed.
Like,
where's the dollars? Where's the house?
Yeah.
Where's the success?
Yeah, I can just go on 3 years.
So don't you think there's a lot of people, 12, 15 people?
To bring?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The pressure on it.
That's ridiculous.
I can't even call that when you go back.
But there's people that do it. Almost every other day.
They do it. Yeah.
Eddie, that's
what's crazy about it.
That's Eddie Mass Text of his secret messages. Be spiritual today, the Mass Text of 15.
Thank you for listening to HP Oddcast. Here's a clip of part two of my interview with Seymour Swan. I've been told that your father never been to one of your shows.
No.
Why?
No, he can't hear.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Well, that'll do it.
So why don't you have one of those people?
So he would just watch everybody else, and when you laugh, he'll go, you know, I'll just wait for someone else.
Somebody laughing at a woman falling.
Yeah.
Oh, that's part of the show.
Yeah.
So I'm urinating on this chick the other day.
Big jokes.
Like you said, you should have like a little side
guy
on the side. Didn't they do that on SNL?
Yeah.
Today's news. You see the guy screaming it on the side.
Yeah, he's not been to the show at all. And you know, like even my mom, she's only been to two.
Yeah.
She doesn't.
But they know you. They know.
Oh, I've seen tapes and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Dad knows what I'm doing. He's, you know, always, you know, expresses how proud he is. You know, I do a lot with my dad because he's. How old is Granddad Jay? 77 or something. But I take him like to his doctor's appointment, and it's like it's actually the biggest comedic moment for me ever when I take him because he can't hear.
Right.
Yeah. So everything the doctor wants, him to do, I have to yell.
You have to translate.
Yeah. So I went there one time and he was getting a stool sample.
Oh.
Yeah. And It was really bad. Wow. I was like, Dad, pull on your pants. He's like, pull on your pants. And my dad pulled down his pants, and you know, my dad's, I think it was 77 or something, right? I've never seen his ass. There's no reason for me to see it.
Right.
No. And I saw it.
Yeah.
And you?
Yeah, I've never seen a 77-year-old ass.
Yeah.
You don't want to.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, you don't.
It's like he's been doing deadlifts for the last 10
years.
It
just looked tired. It was just tired.
That wasn't tired. If there's anything you want to plug, please, Seymour Swan.
Well, right now, so as far as New Yorkers, if you're in New York, you know people in New York, you're coming in, please come see my show. We haven't been around 25 years for nothing. But thank you guys once again, and please support stand-up comedy.
Yeah, support the arts. Thank you very much.
7unknown.com.
Eddie McGuire, 7unknown.com. Fearless Cabrera.
Hey, I'm going to be there in front of all the mirrors in my apartment.
There you go.
Thank you. He's got three fans going.
Kevin McGee.
Did anyone say www.net?
No,
you don't have to.
KevinMcGee.net. My website's kind of under construction. I put it up by accident. It's a picture of me. It says I'm from Ontario, Canada. I'm not from Ontario, Canada. I don't know. I can't work that.
But once again,
it is a joke.
It's part of his hilarity. Once again, I will be on hpproductions.net. Thank you very much for listening, and love you all.